This week, we're sharing two segments. First up, Shanat Lee is an elder Chicano communist activist and political prisoner, 30 years into a 50-year sentence for disarming a sheriff's deputy. Of that 30 years, he spent 23 so far in solitary confinement. At age 73, Shanat Lee has and continues to face medical neglect at the hands of the Texas prison system, with outside supporters having to apply pressure to get him things like a wheelchair or a proper diet. You'll hear our guest of the Shanat Lee Freedom Campaign, Arohi, talk about his case and the phone zaps about Shanat Lee's condition, as well as how to get in contact with the comrade. Check our show notes for a bunch of links. Then you'll hear an interview that's been a long time in the making. Hibachi Lamar is an anarchist who grew up in Chicago and began considering anarchism thanks to a letter he received from Anthony Rayson of the South Chicago Anarchist Black Cross Zine Distro during over a year of solitary confinement many years ago. Since that time, Compa Lamar has been organizing with projects like IWOC, which he helped to found, the IWWIU 613, the Self-Organized Liberation School in Inglewood, Food Distribution Mutual Aid, and Chicago Local Organizing Committee of the Black Autonomy Federation. And he is now the author of three collections of essays listed at his website, as well as numerous zines. The majority of this conversation has kind of difficult audio because it was over prison phones. Happily, at the end of the chat, we get to hear Hibachi following his recent release, having maxed out his sentence and returned to his organizing and life in the streets of Chicago. There's a fundraiser ongoing to support Hibachi in his post-release life that's linked in the show notes.
My name is Arohi, and I use they, them pronouns, and I'm with the Shanat Lee Freedom Campaign.
Some listeners may be aware of who Shanat Lee is, but would you mind saying a few things about him and a bit about the support campaign?
Shanat Lee is a 73-year-old communist, Chicano, indigenous political prisoner, and right now he's held at the Estelle unit of the Texas prison system. He's been in solitary confinement for over 23 years, and he's serving a 50-year long sentence. He's been inside for 30 years in total, and he has been a longtime organizer and fighter of police violence and U.S. imperialism. He is a longtime fighter for Chicano and indigenous rights. He continues to write about the Palestinian resistance, the Black liberation struggle, the Zapatistas, and he was wrongfully convicted at 23 for a murder case. And after he was exonerated and released, he started organizing for prisoners on the outside. And in the late 90s, he actually even spearheaded the Free Ricardo Aldapa Huera campaign and got a man off of Texas death row. Like, he's literally been organizing since before I was born, since I'm sure before a lot of listeners were born. And he continues to do so inside prison. He guides the campaign and everything we do. And this case, in 1996, he's inside for disarming a cop who was threatening his life. But unfortunately, Shanat Lee was, of course, convicted of threatening the sheriff. And this is all just because he was fighting for his people, organizing for his people. And like I said, they're just scared of his revolutionary potential and what he can do.
Yeah, and if listeners want to go back, we'll link in the show notes, but we have a recording of him talking about the two cases that have brought him into prison, as well as an interview that I conducted, I think, about 2 years ago with him. So the support committee has been a bit more active recently with calls for people to join in on phone zaps for Shanat Lee. Can you talk about just sort of like any moments in the last year that have sort of described his situation, right? He was like, where his health is at and what treatment he's been getting or being denied?
Yeah, these last 2 years, his body has been deteriorating. He has been complaining of a numbness radiating throughout his body. He has lost a severe amount of weight in a very short amount of time. And there's nothing that pigs inside are doing for him. There's no diet that he's getting. He has been denied a walker and a wheelchair at many of these units. He's been denied physical therapy. He's fallen. There's no handicapped or elder accessible shower. He has fallen and hit his head in the past few months. That was very terrifying. He recently told us he was crawling around in his cell before we started this most recent phone blast. And that's how we got him a walker and a wheelchair. So this is just severe medical neglect for decades and severe elder abuse. They're not giving him the care he needs. And they've been leaving him in the dark about his health for decades. There's no proper documentation about any treatment that he's been getting, any medications that he's been receiving or not receiving. Yeah, no documentations of checkups. You know, usually when someone loses so much weight in a short amount of time, that's when you start giving them more attention. But there's no record of that. So that's a little bit more about what's been going on these last 2 years. And then earlier this month, he was transferred from Carol Young to the Estelle unit in Huntsville, and his condition has worsened. Before we started calling, it only took one day of calls to get him the walker and the wheelchair. So, you know, these phone blasts work, but he's continued to be denied regular physical therapy, B12 shots, and a diet prescribed by UTMB doctors, which is imperative to getting his health at a better place. He also has not received any of his books, letters, or other personal property that should have been transferred with him from McConnell and the Carol Young unit. There's also a light that never turns off. He's sleeping in his cell in Estelle, and he's complaining about, this light, this really bright light. And he was telling me, you know, even sleep deprivation is like a weapon of the state to with his health. And he has also not been allowed any recreation time since he's been transferred. So we just want to keep pushing Estelle. Every single unit they take him to, every single transfer, no matter what they're doing, we want the whole Texas prison system to know that Shinashli has an army of support behind him, and that we know who he is, and that we're always going to be watching them. So we need to keep them accountable and just continue disrupting until we see a change in his conditions.
And what kind of success have you seen from those? Like, I mean, he was just transferred into the Estelle unit not that long ago, as I understand. So I imagine part of that has been in response to people stepping up and speaking out about the case.
For sure. He literally told me yesterday on the phone, anyone who tells you that phone blasts don't work are lying. Because with this most recent phone blast, which is still going on, he cannot walk. Like, he was telling us that he was forced to crawl around his cell. He was denied access to a walker or a wheelchair. And just after one day of calling, we were able to get him both a walker and a wheelchair. So I think, I mean, in my opinion, it's just about making them so sick of us that they give in to our demands. At one point, getting him in a long-term geriatric facility like a cell was also one of our demands. I think they work. I think it's the least that we can do. And the phone blast is still going on. He has also been denied recreation time, physical therapy, which is imperative for his health, just any kind of long-term health care, his medication, and all his personal property from McConnell and Carol Young have not been restored yet. So we just want Estelle unit or wherever Shinashli goes to know that we're watching and he has an army of supporters behind him, and we're not going to stop until not only his demands are met, but until he's free. So like any lie that they tell, any kind of communication repression, that's all just like a small obstacle to us, because we're just not going to stop until he's out of there.
You've said that he's no longer able to walk. Are there any like known medical conditions that he's been, that medical professionals have like pointed to and said like, oh, he's developing symptoms of this, or any like particular either conditions or medications that he's being denied or anything like that?
It was hard for him to get his B12 shots. That's something that he's consistently needed. There was some kind of growth on his liver, and it was affecting his kidney functions. We found out about it way too late in January. A doctor that we work with was telling us that, you know, with something like this and his symptoms of, like, you know, the numbness in certain areas and things like that, you know, he could be at risk of cancer. And, like, you know, he's dropped a severe amount of weight in a very short amount of time. We've been able to figure out that he does not have cancer, but it was a very scary few months, and they were keeping us in the dark about all of that. Whenever we got medical records back, they were very unclear, and, you know, he's been inside for 30 years now, so we should have decades of, like, documentation on this elder, but there just wasn't.
Well, I guess just to stick on the phone zap, can you talk a little bit about how people get involved in the phone zap? And I've seen them before where it's just a graphic goes around and people are suggested to call in. But I know that with that sort of approach towards requesting like popular attention, visible attention in support of a prisoner, that it can be kind of like numbers get changed or people pick up their phone and just leave it off the hook at the prisons, or you get news maybe that one of the officials that you're trying to reach isn't the right person anymore. Like, are you keeping in contact with the people? Are people signing up to do phone zap, or is it just, here's the number, just call when you can?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking. We post all our phone blasts on Instagram as well as at bit.ly/xphoneblast. And we have a Excel spreadsheet where we ask everyone who's called to take notes, who you talk to. We have a phone number to leave behind if they ask for a number so we can get more information later. We want to know exactly what they said, what they're telling you. And then we document it all because, you know, they could tell one person one thing and then the next caller another. So we try to read these notes daily so we can keep the phone blast as updated and accurate as possible. You can sign up at the link bit.ly/xphoneblast, put whatever name you want, and just write down notes about your interactions. And the numbers do change. He's also been moved around a lot. I feel like they just stopped really knowing what to do with him. He was at the, you know, hospital in Galveston. He was at Carol Young. He was at McConnell for that whole time, and now he's at Estelle. But, and all this moving around, I mean, we've done many phone blasts by now. There's really, I mean, we can keep up. So we're keeping on this as often as we can. We're updating the numbers daily. An updated graphic is probably going to go out again after this because, like I said, he received his wheelchair and his walker. So now we're just focusing on the other demands. And he's still in a high security area. So yeah, you can sign up at that link. We have a list of numbers that you can call. And we have a place to take notes. We have a script. A lot of times it can be nerve-wracking to talk to these people. You don't know what to say. We've learned, like, maybe it's not best to always lead with, like, my name is this and I'm calling about Shanashali. You know, say that you're concerned about an elder who's inside and you haven't been able to get information about him. And we have tips on, like, how to have a proper conversation to get the information that we need, as much as we hate talking to the pigs, but this is what we have to do. So we have a script. We have all the numbers that you need to call. We have a place to take notes. And you can also read other people's notes just to know what to say or what other people have, what the other guards and officials have been saying this whole time.
Cool. Thank you. And do you have to be in Texas to participate in this?
Nope. Sometimes we even have emails because we've been getting asks from people not in the U.S. who want to participate and just clog their emails instead of their phone lines. This phone blast, we don't. This is just phones. But you can call from anywhere. It shouldn't take more than 5-10 minutes out of your day, and it really makes a huge difference.
Anytime you're calling anyone, it's pretty easy for them, unless you're taking precautions for them to get your number off of that. Are there any, like, personal privacy things that you would suggest with that?
We've been telling people to do *67. That still works. And if you don't want them to have your real name, you don't have to tell them. You can give them whatever name you want. That's just a way for them to, I guess, kind of like scare you or intimidate you or make you feel like they're going to have all this information on you. But you can tell them whatever name you want, call from whatever number. Do *67 if you don't want them to have your number. And we have more information about privacy on the Excel spreadsheet at the bit.ly as well.
So I heard about this from an email that I received. I spend as little time as possible on Instagram because for mental health reasons or whatever. But is that a thing that people can sign up for there as well if they want to get email updates on what's going on?
You can always email us if you have questions about the phone blast, or I mean, you can DM us as well. Like, one of us will answer. Yeah, but right now we're posting most of our things to Instagram, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's whatever. You know, it's what a lot of people use, and it makes sense. It's a good way to reach a large audience. Well, that's super helpful. Is there anything that comes to mind right now that you want to bring up that I didn't ask about?
I just wanted to say that Shanashali sends his regards. He's always talking about how all of us who've been supporting the campaign and him make him really proud and really strong. So please join us. I want to see him free, and I want to see him continue being proud and strong and doing better. And like he always says, you can jail his body, but not his spirit. He also always talks about the importance of linking prisoner struggles to community struggles, because that's where prisoners come from, and that's eventually where they're going to return to. So we need to embrace prisoners. We need to embrace political prisoners, our revolutionary elders. This is the state's attempt at quelling revolutionary movements, and we just can't let that happen. Like, political prisoners are our compass, and they weren't just organizers in the past. They still are. Like I said, Shanashali is literally one of the facilitators of his own freedom campaign. He's guiding us on every single phone blast, every single post, every single newsletter we put out. They're still organizing behind bars, carrying this struggle into a whole new location, expanding its reach. And we can't let the state continue to target these freedom fighters and isolate them and stamp out this huge movement. So if you can, please join our phone blast. Please join the Shanashali Freedom Campaign. We're looking for members and volunteers all the time. Follow at Free Shanashali Now on Instagram for more updates. And if you just want to donate, we have links on our Instagram for that as well. All the money goes to fundraising materials or his commissary, his legal fees, post-release support. So please just help us out however you can. And Free Shanashali.
Yeah, I'll just prompt for that then. Like, if people want to be in touch with Shanashali, like, what's the best way? And like, if they write or email him, can they expect to hear back?
Yeah, message him on Securus. Try and get on his call list. He really loves writing letters back. Right now with his health conditions, he's kind of gotten a bit slower at that. But he was telling me he reads every single thing that comes across Securus, every single letter he says is like a burst of revolutionary hope. So I just want to keep those bursts going for him. Even if he doesn't respond right away, he's reading it and does a lot for his spirit. So message him on Securus, continue to send him letters, and more of that information will be on our Instagram.
You can find a bunch of his articles on freealvaro.net, right?
Yeah, we're about to revamp the website soon. We also have a newsletter on Substack called Tierra y Libertad. We just put out our Women's Month issue like 2 days ago or something. So yeah, follow us on Instagram about that. Read our Substack. We publish his writings on that at least once a month and have a lot of archival writings and art pieces that, Twitch dropped us off one day. So I've been trying to scan those and put that in there too, just to show just the storied life that he has. So there's many ways to stay in touch about the campaign and who Shinashli is.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk and for this work that you're doing.
Oh yeah, thank you.
If you want to support The Final Straw Radio, you can subscribe to our podcast via various streaming platforms, follow, rate, and share our materials online, and learn more at tfsr.media. And if you'd like to fund our transcription work that allows for easier translation, more accessibility of content, and the zines that we produce for each interview, consider picking up some merch from us or making a one-time or recurring donation via PayPal, Stripe, Venmo, or LibrePay, or joining our Patreon to access early release content and other goodies via the links that you can find at tfsr.media/support. Finally, if you'd like to hear us on your local radio station, visit tfsr.media/radio to find more info or reach out to us for some help. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Willow Whisper for the intro and outro music. Check our show notes for a link to their SoundCloud. The Final Straw Radio is a proud member of the Channel Zero Network of Anarchist Podcasts, and here's a jingle from another member of CZN.
KiteLine is a weekly 30-minute radio program focusing on issues in the prison system. You'll hear news along with stories from prisoners and former prisoners, as well as their loved ones. You'll learn what prison is, how it functions, and how it impacts all of us.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. Here on KiteLine, we hope to share these words across the prison walls.
You can hear us on the Channel Zero Network and find out more at kitelineradio.noblogs.org.
Next up, our conversation with Haibachi Lamar from prison a year ago, speaking on his writings and experience. After the interview, stay tuned for his essay on the powers of self-reflection, produced by Slug. Just a heads up, there are a few mentions of mental distress and suicide in this chat.
My name is Haibachi Lamar, go by he, him pronouns, and I'm a ghetto-bred anarchist who organizes throughout the country, but primarily stationed in Chicago. I do grassroots work with other community organizers, and we basically organize the hood, seeing that folks have food and shelter, and work with collectives throughout the city. And through mutual aid, it becomes something that's substantially not just relevant, but a lot more easier and convenient than the capitalist approach that, you know, has been consuming the city and reducing it to vacant lots, where we now have community gardens and things like that up and cracking. So to maximize the time on the phone that I have, I guess you could say that's it for the moment. I'm also a member of the Black Autonomy Federation, part of the Chicago Local Organizing Committee.
Cool, that's dope. Thank you for that. I wonder if you tell us a bit about your life, your political development, and how you came to identify as an anarchist, and what even that means to you.
Well, throughout my life has been one of struggle. I've learned through trial and error. Those have been my teachers. For the most part, I haven't had too much else when it comes to learning. After the age of 10, when my mom was shot, she's still alive. She's a recovering quadriplegic. So after the age of 10, I was pretty much on my own, you know, sleeping here and there where I could, hopping freight trains. I lived a little bit with my mom when she got out of a rehab, and I had no guidance. My pops passed when I was 15, if I'm not mistaken. I remember seeing him about two or three times. From what I heard, he was a member of the Black Panther Party for self-defense. And pretty much, I made a lot of mistakes in my life, a lot of choices I wish I would have made differently. And with no guidance, those are the things that happens. And it's given me, however, the ability to relate with other people and with others who are in the streets without no guidance. A lot of youth, a lot of people who may have kind of felt like an outcast, for lack of a better word, and on the social economic margins. I grew up what some may consider a bit rough, but what helped me evolve was, like I said, trial and error. Trial and error, reading books. Gangbangers took me in when I was a youth and juvenile and taught me about the ways of the streets and philosophy. Later on, introduced me to avenues of the mind. So with those four guides, trial, error, the streets, and philosophy, those assisted in my development psychologically as well as emotionally, and it inevitably led me to thinking about the deeper aspects of life and about questioning my own existence and where I stand in the universal scheme of it all. I was introduced to anarchism from a prison cell after receiving a letter by Anthony Racine, my compa and friend, and it's been a wrap from there.
Cool. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
Sure, I appreciate you too, compa.
If you were to be speaking to someone and they weren't familiar with the term anarchism or with the concept of Black autonomy, how would you sort of like point them out to what your thinking is of those topics, of those concepts?
If I'm not mistaken, you asked how would I let people know about anarchism and Black autonomy?
Yeah, and what they mean to you. Mm-hmm, yes.
Oh, what does it mean to me? It means everything to me, both of them. Anarchism is something that gave me a sense of understanding, of understanding. It gave me a sense of freedom. It showed me that I can have control of my mind, have control of myself, that there's things such as autonomy, and which is self-rule, and that there's that I really don't need any guru or anyone in authority or anyone trying to tell me what's right or wrong, that I could listen to myself and
you have 1 minute left.
And that there's a community of people who are on the same wavelength. And Black autonomy, you know, with autonomy being being in control of ourselves, for that to resonate in the Black community is substantial, especially considering how many people already resonate with, and particularly Black people already are easily able to resonate with that vibration. So, yeah, ruling ourselves, controlling ourselves psychologically as well as socioeconomically in in an anti-capitalist way, where instead of the dog-eat-dog way of living that we've been conditioned.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
All right, so last we spoke, you were talking about how anarchism to you partially means that you don't need a guru or someone telling you what to do. Your second book, Anarchibalion, Anarchism and Ancient Egyptian Kemetic Knowledge, carries themes of erased knowledge and history that lead people to underestimating themselves. And this theme is like woven through many of the pieces in that book. Can you speak a bit about this idea that knowledge is weaponized to undermine people's ability to self-organize, and about the energy that you hope to engage with critical writings like in that book?
Yes, thanks again for having me. Is weaponized against us, particularly in this country, in the United States of America, as it's called and what have you. It's from early grade school on compartmentalized and geared toward us serving a system defeated instead of us serving us. And we've been starving for some type of fulfillment more and more as we grow. And ideas such as anarchism liberates us from our lack of intellectual as well as social resources to find that fulfillment, to find a fulfillment from physical to social to even spiritual. So spiritual means of knowledge can help us in spiritual ways, whereas people look for fulfillment in other people's theories and things like that. People could turn inwards and realize that within ourselves we could find answers to a lot of the questions that we've been having. This deals a lot with intuition, for example. The ancient Egyptians referred intuition to as the most important quality to develop. So a lot of times, we may ask people like, hey, you think I should trust this person? Or what do you think about this? When a lot of times we could just ask ourselves the same question and then just be quiet for like a minute and just listen to our inner voice. The system may say, go to war or something, or it's honorable to sign up for a military and go and invade other countries, whatever. Don't think, just do, and things like that. When we could just sit for a moment and ask ourselves, and these are things that wasn't really taught to us in school. Like one of my mentors, a person who introduced me to anarchism, in fact, Anthony Racing of South Chicago Anarchist Black Claudine Distro, well, once said in a zine, actually, that people have been taught what to think instead of how to think.
Can you talk about the role that zines and projects like South Chicago ABC Zine Distro that Anthony Racing is involved with, or Truly Press, what projects like those have played in your writing and your self-awareness, particularly the power of short-form essays and the challenge to like pack a punch in just a few pages?
Sure. Well, Anthony Racin, he is amazing. I know that's a thing that people say of people who they're fond of or whatever, but he's a remarkable individual. And what drew me in initially was him writing me when I was in solitary confinement. I was in about my 14th month or so in solitary confinement, and I reached out to a address and a resource list that was being passed around. We fish underneath our cell doors with a line. We pull a string from our towel and keep attaching the strings onto the end of an envelope that we poke a hole through with our pen, with our flex pen, and then loop the string through the hole and put a staple from, like in the mail, when we get mail, they put us, whether it's in-house mail or whatever, they staple the thing closed. So we undo the staple, then, so the opposite side of the hole where I put the, you know, where we put the string through the loop, it, you know, the loop the hole through at, on the opposite end of the envelope, the horizontal opposite end, we click the staple, you know, poke the staple in there and hook this, put the staple into like a little hook, and then fish, what we call fish, we slide the envelope under the door and we connect lines. And initially I was drawn to Fembao ads, but it wasn't really fulfilling me in a way that I wanted. There was some, like a vacancy, you know, like an empty pit that was just still stuck there. And I don't know if I ever told Anthony, but at the time I was thinking of taking my life. I'm gonna just be frank. And when I wrote to him, and I didn't mention anything about that or anything. I just said simply, hey, I see this resource list, and it says that you provide free literature dealing with anarchism, and I'm interested in knowing about it. And if you can send any literature, any type of material, that'd be really appreciated. He wrote back immediately. Like I said, he didn't know at the time. I don't know if I even told him, but the very day when I got this letter, I was thinking of doing something for myself, and I ended up flushing a razor down the toilet after I read his letter. It was a little incorrigibly, it was hard to read a little bit, but it made it even more invaluable, because at first I felt like, wow, I'm getting a letter from a genius, you know, because that's like how geniuses write it, you know, that's what I was thinking. But actually that was like the second thing. The first thing I was thinking was, wow, somebody wrote me, you know, this person wrote me, you know, and he doesn't even know me or anything, and he still took the time out to write me, you know. So, and he was telling me about anarchism, and he was letting me know that the resistance welcomes me, even, you know, me, somebody in prison, you know, inside of solitary confinement. And it's been a wrap since. He sent me not only his handwritten letter, but also Alexander Berkman's ABC of Anarchism, Lorenzo Kimball Irvin's Anarchism and the Black Revolution, and a zine I kept under my pillow for years, which was Emma Goldman's The Psychology of Political Violence. And it's been a wrap since there. I also gained a lot of insight on writing through reading Anthony Grayson's zines and his collaborations with Sean Swain. From Sean Swain, I learned a lot through his writing, such as the invaluability of beginning writings with a quote, how to write concisely, and painting images in the mind. I also learned writing from Tom Big Warrior, who was a brilliant Marxist. I heard he just passed. I used to paint his house while he teach me dialectical materialism. And when I'd write articles from an anarchist perspective, I appreciated that he let me print in his press. So I learned from different people, and I'm still learning. And I also learn from the feedback that people give me. So, and I also want to give a huge shout out to North Carolina. You know, North Carolina is phenomenal. You know, and I'm here for y'all. You know, and I love y'all. You know, y'all are great, and we appreciate all the work that y'all is doing. You know, with putting out the resistance and you know, keeping the flames rising. You know, so
thank you. Okay. Is that like you thinking like Blackbird Distro or Durham ABC or Blue Ridge ABC or any individuals like?
You have 1 minute left.
Anyone in particular?
Yeah, all the above. You know, in Asheville, and you know, everybody just, you know, showing support and contributing to making the world a world of resistance against oppressive forces and making it into a more ideal society, one which is free and liberated from the prison gates of oppression. So whether it's in here, whether it's outside, you know, collectively we hold the boat hutter, you know, and it takes collective unity and resistance to liberate ourselves. And we
thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
I understand that you were a founding member of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, have long been a member of the Black Autonomy Federation. You also helped to run the Liberation School at an abandoned space in Englewood neighborhood in South Side of Chicago, and did Sunday food distribution. I wonder if you could talk about some of the political revolutionary thrival projects that you've been involved with.
Sure. Well, Brian Apparel, a few others, and I co-founded the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee in, I think it was 2014. And basically, it was a hands in the mud project and writing prisoners from the union office back and forth between the union office that used to be on the GHQ office, used to be on, on the north side, like further, a little further than what it is right now. And yeah, I'd sit there and talk with Brianna while she was in the city she was in. And we basically write prisoners and ask them if they'd be interested in joining the one big union. And it's something that revolutionaries such as Lorenzo Kamora Irvin have been wanting to see for quite some time now, and I was just rubbing my hands with enthusiasm to see it spark into a flame. And we've gained substantial ground. I believe there's over 500 members now in quote unquote good standing. To me, everyone who's interested in and gets involved is standing good ground. And so, yeah, our numbers are growing. And we started up the IU 613 branch and the Industrial Workers of the World Union, Workers Union, which, you know, is worldwide. And our newest member who I know so far, at least from my end, is my bunkie, you know, my cellmate, who just requested membership the day before yesterday. And he's also requested membership into the Black Autonomy Federation. So Black Autonomy Federation is an organization that is geared toward reclaiming the autonomy of Black people and people of color who are interested in advancing autonomously from the government, to put it frankly. We organize all over. It started in the mid-1990s by co-founders Lorenzo Kamora Irvin, Sister Janana Irvin, was also very remarkable and skillful organizer, as well as journalist and author. Yes, and some other members in Atlanta. And in the late 2010s, I've had a substantial role in co-organizing the Chicago Local Organizing Committee of the Black Autonomy Federation, which has been very exciting. And the members, I'm a member, and, you know, all of us who's in it have been very good at learning as students while at the same time teaching others at Skillshare, such as, you know, whether it's in a project, in the housing projects, or whether it's on a corner or in an alley doing a teaching on 63rd, on 63rd and King, or King Drive, or doing a teaching, in, like I said, in a project, you know, in Parkway Gardens, you know. And mind you, these things are kind of taboo in the areas that we be in, because these are areas where there's a lot of poverty. You're talking about gang rivalry from right across the street, you know, from the street of each other. And so to see the ability to form affinities, even when, even in an environment where there's so much hostility and opposition, and to hear people's requests for guidance has played an instrumental role in laying the groundwork for future revolutionary development in these areas, particularly on the south side of Chicago, but, you know, in different places throughout the country as well. And the day I was locked up, I had a substantial amount of books, the Anarchabalion, which has been a substantial organizing instrument that I was looking forward to sharing with more folks, and people have been expressing substantial interest. There's also a really important thinker and new member of the collective as well, who's right here on my phone, who's also a prolific author. There's some important thinkers, important authors that's locked up, who have not just a really good head on their shoulders, but also having their hearts in the right place. And there's the same thing on the streets as well. It's just a lot of people don't have, a substantial amount of people in the ghetto don't have resources, you know, and a lot of people in prison have life sentences, or, you know, it's just basically cemented behind concrete and cell bars, you know. So radio stations such as this, podcasts such as this, such as The Final Straw Radio, is extremely important, because how else are people supposed to, you know, gonna have the chance to hear about, you know, these ideas and what's behind the cement?
I might ask more about the Liberation School.
Sure, thank you. And yeah, just a little taste, like, you know, the Liberation School at Englewood, you know, it was something that is really exciting, and it was brand new to the area, you know, and to be able to organize from a liberated space is something that's be good to see more of in the future, and just like there is in different places throughout the world, you know. And I was just reading a book on South African women who were workers, you know, back in the 70s, they had things going from a squat, turning board ups into liberation schools. You know, that's a optimistic way of going about the reality that we're in.
I've been really enjoying your latest book, sharing the title with one of your zines, The Ghetto Bred Anarchist, out from Liberation School Press last year. I'm really struck by the writing style running through many of the pieces, which I would describe as an invitation or incitation towards self-awareness and uplifting. Haibachi, can you talk about who you're writing to in that book and in those zines and what you hope the readers will take from it?
Yes, thank you. I wrote that book and I write for those who can relate to oppression and the ambition to obliterate it from our existence to the best of our capabilities. So whether it's people who are systemically oppressed through racism, through gender bias, from being physically different in any way, shape, or form, or whether mentally alienated from the modus operandi of, you know, society today, you know, or at any time, you know, even when we're long gone, you know, I write for, you know, basically people who are interested in, first of all, you know, to read something a little bit different and something more liberating, and for those who've taken a step forward and haven't taken a step aside and reflecting on things. And yep, so that's in a nutshell, so to speak. So I write for.
Cool. Thank you for that.
I write for I write for everyone on that vibration, and you know, yeah. So
great. What are you working on these days that you can share about? Is there anything that you're excited about and finding challenging and inspirational?
Yes, I've been writing things regarding the books I've been receiving from Midwest Books to Prisoners. They're very empowering and they're very relevant to the situation today. Even books that are maybe considered a little dated years-wise, there's a lot of things that are relevant today. And I just got out the hole. And in the hole, they had me in a diversionary treatment unit. And in the diversionary treatment unit, there's people back there who's constantly been being spun by correctional officers, by the psych treatment unit people and everything. The day that I got let out the diversionary treatment unit back in the general population, someone took 22 ibuprofen. After letting the CO know that he was about to commit suicide, you know, and the CO just walked by and spun them, you know, like a top. You know, the cameras don't have any audio, so it just shows the, you know, they're making their rounds. And so, you know, we was all kicking our doors and everything and letting them know, hey, you know, this guy's been requesting this, you know, to speak with somebody, and he's been constantly being ignored. So, you know, after finally someone came, he got seen and everything, and they took him out. And by the way, he's now a new member of the Black Autonomy Federation, the prison chapter.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep, it is. You know, and I hope the brother's okay. The compas at Midwest are sending him some literature, and you know, so it's constant empowerment. That's motivation. Every day, people in here are constantly oppressed. You know, on the outside, in the whole governed world, you know, people are oppressed in some way, shape, or form. This happens to just be like the eye of oppression storm. So, with so many things going on, forming study groups and having literature available is the key. You know, because a lot of people haven't heard about anything like prison strikes going on, such as the ones that happened in 2014 and 2011 and the later ones. So people in here that's been doing life, you know, there's people in here that
you have 1 minute left.
There's people in here that's being woke for the first time, you know, due to the materials being sent and due to the rapport. So
listeners to this interview will have just heard Habachi Lamar speaking while incarcerated last year. I'm very happily joined by Habachi, not incarcerated, having maxed out your sentence. Thanks a lot for taking time to make this phone call. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I appreciate you for all the phenomenal work that you're doing and for communicating with me while I was on the inside as well. Gratitude.
Yes. The last time that we had spoken, you were kind of talking about being in and out of solitary confinement a bunch. I don't know if you want to talk any about how the last year of your sentence went, if there's any experiences you want to share right now, or like talk about anyone that was in there with you. If not, that's fine. I can just move on to a different question, but I want to make space if you do.
With the exception that understanding of people suffering throughout solitary confinement and prison in general throughout the country and throughout the world should be a prime consideration in everyone's life, particularly in this era of Trumpian policies and agendas that are cold as ice. So with that being said, that there's so much that's happening every moment. It would be like a whole new thing. You know, if people only knew, you know, what people are experiencing right now, you know, on a perpetual basis. So Jonathan Jackson mentioned that his favorite line from Fanon was, "The time for talking is ended. The time for acting has begun." We can move on to the next question.
Yeah.
So one thing that we had tried to record from the conversation that listeners will have just heard from earlier over the series of calls that we had was just sort of your thoughts on what Black anarchism is, what it means to you. Like, we kind of talked a bit about how you got into politics and how you got into anarchism through interacting with South Chicago ABC Zine Distro and some other projects that you had named. But I wonder if you want to speak to that concept or that tendency as it's named, just kind of share with the audience some sort of framing that you take with you of what that means.
Black anarchism may mean different things to different people. One person, it may be something dealing with strictly no nation mosaic, and with the different pieces from that mosaic being those that are formed of things that support the idea of that particular form of anarchism per se. And you have Black anarchists, where people will have a definition of Black anarchism where the idea is meant toward a particular ethnicity or people particularly being derived from African ascent most immediately in the human race. There's people who believe in both, and it's not to say that any of the two are racist, you know, because neither essentially be racist as well as anti-racist, what anarchism is about. Anarchism is beautiful also in the extent that it is an ever-expansive idea and an ever-blossoming formation that federates into new explosive dynamic formations in parts unknown. It constantly develops, even in places where its possessor was placed for that possessor's destruction. When Berkman wrote "The Idea is a Thing," he was on to some. Returning to Black anarchism, for venture too off, too further off, too far off, Black anarchism is what we make of it. It's also a frame of mind. It's the Black flag in the eye of everything pure by the standards of those who uphold the 25% poverty level of Black folk in Chicago, et cetera, thus and so forth. Politics, I don't even call it politics, I call it politics. You have people here working here at this Dollar General and working hard, grinding. We're the managers, probably getting their nails filed, getting paid a whole lot more in Honolulu somewhere or something, you know. Nothing to take away from getting a vacay or nothing, but just people who be on their hands and knees grinding, making sure that everything is okay for folks who got mouths to feed, the unrecognized of the world, who feel, who sense more than have a etymological understanding of a term blackness, of a term black anarchism, black revolutionary, black revolution. It's an attitude. It's a state of clarity. It's an encouraging smile and an uplifting hand to someone who's been kicked down by everyone else because of the mistakes that they made, and not even telling them about anything called black anarchism or anything. Just walking the person home. It's an experience. You know how you have an experience? It's an experience. And like I said, it can mean many more things to many more people. And in time, many more ideas may evolve from these ideas themselves. Without further ado, would you like to move on to the next question?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to say anything about the fundraiser that's running to help cushion the landing now that you're out?
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for everyone who showed support, for everyone who donated, and even people even if you couldn't have and wish that, you know, you could have, but just thought, you know, like, wow, well, you know, I'm there with you in thought, you know, just donating a thought. And, you know, means a lot in a society where so many of us are dusted under the doormat of ignorant right, I guess you could say, you know, because there's so many things that it's not being showed on a lot of news channels. There's a lot of things that's not being showed that if people were aware of, people would be like, whoa, you know. So, you know, the support that helped me out is really appreciated. I really appreciate everything. And it supported me with getting the phone that I'm on right now. So thank you. And we're getting these interviews cracking. And yep, thank you. I appreciate y'all.
Cool. Are there any organizing projects that you're excited to be like joining back up with or trying to get started where you're at in Chicago?
Yes. Several.
Do you want to talk about them? If not, that's okay, but...
Yes, enthusiastically, I wish I could, but okay. I'm disciplined enough, you know, to know that as wise as not to.
Cool, I hear that.
Yeah.
I know it's imperative that people be... this is my interpretation of what you'd said, but it's really important that people are thinking about incarceration and just about the grind and how hard life is right now. I'm wondering if just getting out, like when you came out, were you shocked at the prices of stuff? Or you can only get limited news on the inside, especially if you're a lot of time in solitary confinement. But like, was there anything that you were surprised about that you didn't realize when you were last inside?
Yeah, actually, the graffiti outside my mama's place changed. I'm used to it being different. But the prices are a little higher, I noticed. And I'm trying to think, it's a big difference from, you know, commissary, you know, like where the, yeah, but like there's ice cream, and even though there's ice cream at the, you know, commissary and everything, it's like, it's not the, you know, the same selection exactly. You know, but.
And way more expensive too, right?
Yeah, yes, yeah. But I think of, you know, the folks inside and the importance of raising the campaign for support Compa Casey Goonan, who's in federal, who just got transferred to Pennsylvania. You know, it's important that they receive attention. They're a political prisoner, and I know them personally, and they have serious medical concerns, but they're persevering, and they're all-out revolutionary for the people, and a stalwart bearer of liberation in the Palestinian struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for mentioning Casey's situation, and I'll definitely put links in the show notes about their case. Yeah, of course. Are there any other people you want to uplift right now?
Yes, whoever's listening, know that your potential is beyond anything that has ever been seen before, and more than you may ever know. Never let anybody tear you down to the point where you stop from exercising the maximization of your potential. I don't care who it is. Remember, you got someone in this world named Compa Lamar. Compa Lamar is someone who understands what it's like to not fit in society, not fitting in with the customs of what passes as was cool.
I guess, is there anything that is on your mind that you want to talk about right now, or do you feel good with where we're at?
Oh, there's so much. I'm really thankful for the work that you've been doing. You know, I've been reading in zine form the interviews you've been having with Sean Swain, for example, and others. Some of our most thought-provoking hours of playing mind pong with ourselves against the wall. So, you know, kudos and congrats, because them zines is dynamic and these interviews are sensational.
Thank you. That means a lot. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Closing us out, here's Hibachi Lamar reading his piece On the Powers of Self-Reflection, produced by Slug.
The importance of self-reflection by Hibachi Lamar. Whitney Houston once attested that she decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. A scientific principle in magic teaches that energy follows thought. Pythagoras, a philosopher from Crotona and credited founder of Western numerology in the 5th century BCE, imparted to his students, declining from the public ways, walk in unfrequented paths. The path of self-reflection, especially when starting off, can feel inconsolably lonely. When I express myself in elementary. My teachers had me sit my desk outside the class. When I'd hear others laughing, I'd sit my desk over and peek closer to the window from my seat. The effect was I grew more withdrawn. And would walk home in different directions, preferably ones where no one could find me. Ones where no one could see me. I've been in a lifetime of fights. Been told I was autistic, though I didn't know whether to take that as an insult or a compliment, since autistic people are geniuses. I've been told by a prison guard in the hole that his colleagues don't see me, nor anyone confined in the unit as human beings. Incompatibility, which draws outcasts like us to turn inward, leads to an unconventional thought life, a search for something relatable to embrace. We teach ourselves from different books, through zines. We learn in a different direction, in a direction that leads to a sense of meaning and unconventional realizations. Those who treat you as if you're not human, whose sense of humanity deserves to be questioned. In a twist of irony, we discover it's through descending the darkest hole where you find yourself reaching the irrepressible heights of illumination. Exceptional perspective, in fact, that stands out. that's viewed as odd, like a Labrador looking diagonally in the mirror. In retrospect, you see your perspective on life. When it's your own, plays a pivotal role. Placing your life in perspective. These realizations revolve around a personal appreciation toward the shadow you cast, of making each moment magical by determining where your energy is directed. In deviating from the demands of blind obedience, you become a fate turner. You discover that in determining what steps you take, you determine your destiny. Every stumbling block is a milestone in disguise. The ups and downs come with the terrain. Be brave. Be resolute. Let nothing stop you in your path of self-actualization. It's a winding path that gives us, in every turn of events, a new vista where we can reflect. Does a dog barking from the edge of a cliff know that it's its own echo that's barking back? And do you know that the world will affirm you to be who you affirm yourself to be, and the world the importance of self-reflection. By Hibachi Lamar. Track laid by Compa.
Springload Precarious.
Now we do. Solidarity, shout outs and love to the final straw.
This is The Final Straw Radio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions and suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net or thefinalstrawradio@protonmail.com. If you'd like to use any episode for your project or radio show, feel free to do so. Just send us an email to let us know. If you care to, you can send us letters at TFSR, P.O. Box 6004, Asheville, North Carolina, 28816. Programming support is brought to you by Firestorm Books. Located at 1022 Haywood Road in West Asheville, Firestorm is a bookstore and social movement space owned by its workers, in operation since 2008. Their event calendar and complete catalog of books can be found online at firestorm.coop.